She would be talking to David, who would facilitate her from across the room, and then he would reflect back, and then he would look for himself, either just what is facilitation for him, or, you know, something, yeah, what is facilitation for him, and then he would be talking to Tony, who would reflect him from there. And then Tony would, and then so on down the line.
Great. All right, since we've got 90% of the old folks at the other end of the room, how about if we start there?
Yeah.
Would that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we need to kind of get in the line here.
Oh, there's an empty spot right there. Somebody would bring a cushion up instead of a bench. That's perfect. I don't know about those benches. Does anybody sit on those benches? Do you? Oh, good. Okay. Never mind then.
Last resort.
As a last resort? Yeah. Well, you know, isn't it the rule that you can always replace it with a cushion? You can always come up here and get a cushion and replace it? Oh, good. Yeah. And then your knees can hang over the edge and a little mat. Uh-huh.
Could we do a quick review? I was trying so hard to catch it on tape. I mean, on digital, I missed it.
On tape? Yeah, sure, absolutely.
So the topic is...
And since you're first, it would be helpful, wouldn't it? Yeah, good, right there.
So the topic is, what is facilitation? So each of us will look at what that is for ourselves. And then, let's say, for example, Dave started, then he would briefly say, what is facilitation, what he sees about that. And he would be talking to you, and you would facilitate him. And then you would say for you, and you'd be talking to Deb, and she'll be facilitating you.
Thank you. And now, my understanding is, Jenna, at a certain point, you may call a little timeout on us, and...
Yeah, do the...
Reverse...
Instead of going all the way down, and then all the way back.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. They channel somebody who hasn't facilitated every day of his life for the last 100 years.
Who hasn't?
I mean, I don't want you to give the whole thing away, you know, okay. First, give the right answer. You know.
Let's see. Facilitation is...
Gosh.
Facilitation is attempting to assist another person by getting out of the way.
Mm-hmm. So facilitation is attempting to assist another person by getting out of the way.
Well done.
Okay. And this is... Similar, I think. I'm looking at facilitation as in facile, to make easy, to do whatever to make it as easy as possible for a person to explore their process.
So you're looking at facilitation as doing whatever is possible to make it as easy for a person to explore their process. I think as I look at it, looking at facilitation as showing up and offering presence.
So you look at facilitation as showing up and offering presence. Facilitation is being a mirror.
Facilitation is being a mirror. Facilitation is looking inward.
So for you, facilitation is looking inward. I was looking at it as an expression of Sangha, that we were practicing doing for others what we would like to do for ourselves and all of life, I suppose.
So you're like looking at it in terms of Sangha, we're practicing doing for others what we would like to do for ourselves and for all of life. Facilitation is being present so that another person can discover what's going on for them.
Facilitation is being present, so another person can discover what's going on for them. The image of the mirror came up for me also. So facilitation is a way of reflecting for another person what they have said, so that they, it helps the other person assist with seeing and getting clear on one's own processes.
So for you, facilitation, the image of a mirror came up, and it helps to assist to reflect back to the other person their own process, and I believe you said to help them become more clear. Facilitation is getting out of the way and being with a person in respect and seeing their advocacy.
So facilitation is getting out of the way and with respect and seeing their advocacy. What's coming up for me with facilitation is the word allowing, and just allowing, allowing presence.
So it comes up for you around facilitation is allowing, allowing presence. One thing that I see about facilitation is witnessing, compassionately witnessing someone else's process.
What you're saying for you about facilitation is it's about compassionately witnessing somebody else's process.
Quick turn up. Sherry, what do you think? Do you feel like it's going fast enough that you want to complete, or should we switch the topic?
It's up to you. I mean, we're still...
Seems like it would be nice to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
Let it go
ahead. Let's do that. Besides, it now feels like a horrible curve to throw somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
What I'm thinking about facilitation is it's a space where each human can take responsibility for what's true for them and have it be held in a place of compassion and kindness, which allows that person to see their own adequacy within the process.
Am I just working with it? But the bottom line of what you said was that people could be adequate or see the adequacy of their of who they are.
Yeah.
For me, facilitation is being as present as possible for another being and for ourselves. And so as we mirror, we also have the opportunity to look as deeply as possible to our own process or how what's being said or presented applies within us as well as them.
So for you, facilitation is about being as present as possible for another being and yourself, so that as you're mirroring what that other person is saying, you're also getting to look deeply into what is so for you. And I saw that facilitation for me is about standing with the part, well, it's not only standing with, but having faith in and standing with the part that is in every human being that wants to look, that wants to wake up. And I'm seeing that there's this kind of conditioned doubt that most people don't even want to do that. Mm. And so facilitating is really about standing with and in faith the ones that does.
Mm-hmm. So for you, facilitation is about standing with and having faith in that part in everyone that really wants to look, even though there is this kind of conditioned doubt about that. You really see that that's facilitation. It feels like right now where I am with it, facilitation is being able to drop the voices to be present with another person. And it also feels like a really beautiful way to be with another person.
For you right now, it feels like it's facilitation is being able to drop the voices and be with another person. And just in general, a way to be with another person. I was looking at facilitation as being the caretaker of a container that's big enough to hold what's happening for the other person, for me, and really for the whole room, if there's more than one person involved.
Yeah, so what you're seeing is facilitation is being able to hold a container that's big enough for that person and for yourself and for what's going on in the room. I think for me, facilitation is my sweetest experience always of being present and just really being in the moment where I can respond from that place.
So for you, facilitation is the sweetest moment of being present and where you can respond from that place in the moment. In my experience, facilitation is a teacher for me to be in the moment and completely present as possible.
So for you, facilitation is the teacher for you to be completely present and in the moment and completely as present as possible. When I looked, what I saw facilitation as creating a heart-opening space where there arises this unconditional love and acceptance for both the facilitator and the one being facilitated.
So for you, facilitation is creating a heart-opening space that creates for both the facilitator and the person being facilitated. And for me, facilitation would be creating and holding an environment of safety and loving kindness that allows whatever arises to arise in acceptance.
So for you, facilitation is creating a space where there's of love and acceptance for whatever arises. And I also was thinking of facilitation as being able to get, as a facilitator, to be able to get conditioning out of the way and be in that place of acceptance and of love of whatever the other person shares.
So your facilitation is being able to get conditioning out of the way so that you can be with the person with love and compassion. I was looking at facilitation as being with another person and just accepting where they are without judgment and allowing them to see what they need to see.
You see facilitation as being a place of being with another person and accepting them without judgment and allowing them to see whatever they need to see. For me, facilitation is a gift that deepens my practice coming to center. And I experience facilitation as a space of great spaciousness, mindfulness, and loving compassion.
So for you, facilitation is a gift that allows you to come to center, and you experience it as compassion.
I guess David would have to really project and get to his facilitator over here at the end of the line there.
Well, for me, at this point, facilitation feels like a big practice opportunity. Just to be as present as possible. And in doing that, hopefully there can be a benefit for the person I'm facilitating to.
So for you right now, facilitation is a big practice opportunity to be as present as possible and hopefully to assist the person you're facilitating as well. Mm-hmm.
So, for me, facilitation is exactly this. Being able to be with people whose hearts are open, who are as present as they can possibly be, with as little personality interfering as... So I don't know, I'm sure other people felt that, you know, and that awareness that I think somebody said this the other day, would be honored to be facilitated by anybody in this room because of the open-hearted caring that's there. It has nothing to do with how scared the person is or how insecure or anxious about their skills. It has nothing to do with their skills. It's that open-hearted presence, the desire to be helpful to another human. That's, I mean, that's it. And besides which, I thought everybody did a fabulous job. But that's an aside. I don't want to encourage a fabulous job because it so misses the point. Yeah. Cameron?
I just thought that was one of the most heart-opening experiences, just to hear all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now we're going to close them up. No, just kidding.
Before we do, the training manual's got to be an audio manual. Because to have that be an audio manual,
that's
incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Linda.
Well, something that struck me is that I project was that we were all speaking from our experience of being facilitated, as well as from our experience of facilitating.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, you know, I experience unconditional positive regard when I am facilitated.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Yeah, because if we talked about what is it to be a facilitator, we would probably get really different, you know, we'd get much more...
Curious cat.
And, you know, the heart pounding and the anxiety that comes before, you know, people talk about that, the, you know, the energy that builds before you come into the room and that sort of thing, to be a facilitator. But what we're talking about is receiving that. That's really nice. Yeah, thank you. Okay, I was kidding about the heart closing, but we are going to hit the opposite side of this. So, Jen?
What is facilitation not? So, which actually, you know, could be quite liberating.
Right? Yeah, that's true. It might be more heart. All right. So, shall we do the same order, same process, or?
Sure. Yeah.
So for me in particular, facilitation is not trying to prove my adequacy to the outside.
So for you in particular,
facilitation is not about trying to prove your adequacy to be outside. And first thing that arose for me is that facilitation is not about anything being wrong on either side.
So for you, facilitation is not about anything being wrong on either side. For me, facilitation is not about having any kind of personal agenda or trying to fix or change someone in any way.
So for you, facilitation is not having a personal agenda or trying to fix in any way. For me, facilitation is not trying to figure out, go to conditioning to look for answers or change anything.
So for you, facilitation is not going to conditioning to find answers or to change anything? For me, conditioning is not conditioning. For me, facilitation is not engaging with another person's condition.
Yeah, for you, facilitation is not engaging with another person's condition. Yeah, everything everyone has said, that facilitation is not something that I want to turn over to conditioning to decide how I should do it, how I should be, how I can do it right.
So everybody said, and you don't want to turn facilitation over to conditioning to decide how to do it, how to do it. For me, facilitation is not about figuring out anything.
For you, facilitation is not about figuring out anything. For me, I would say facilitation is not about having standards and about trying to meet up to something standards.
So for you, facilitation is not about having any standards and trying to meet a particular standard. For me, facilitation is not, although it's been said, trying to get it right and trying to copy other people's style.
So for you, facilitation is not about trying to get it right and copy other people's style. For me, facilitation is not about achievement, going somewhere, getting something accomplished. It's not about success.
So for your facilitation, it's not about going somewhere, getting something accomplished. It's not about you at all. It's not about success. For me, facilitation is not trying to help somebody solve a problem.
So for you, facilitation is not trying to help someone solve a problem. For me, facilitation is not relating to another and projecting my opinions and ideas on them.
So for you, facilitation is not relating to another and projecting your own.
forget what you said for
opinions.
Opinions.
On another.
For me, facilitation is not indulging the voices of conditioning.
For you, facilitation is not indulging the voices of conditioning. For me, facilitation is not helping someone. Facilitation is not about helping someone. And I feel the need to say it a third time. Facilitation is not about me helping someone.
So for you, facilitation is not about helping someone. And the second and third time, it is not about helping someone. For me, facilitation is not about being in conditioning and trying to do it in a right way.
For you, facilitation is not about being in conditioning and trying to do it the right way. For me, facilitation is not about me and not about whether I'm being liked or doing a good job.
So for you, conditioning is not about you or whether you're being liked or doing a good job. For me, facilitation is not about being separate from or different from the person I'm facilitating.
So for you, facilitation is not about being separate or different from the person that you are facilitating. For me, facilitation is not about worrying whether or not I'm going to have a response to what I hear.
So for you, facilitation is not about worrying about whether or not you have a response to what you hear. For me, facilitation is not about trying to fix someone to make them feel better so that I can feel better.
Mm-hmm. So for you, facilitation is not about trying to fix someone so that you can feel better, or so that they can feel better, or that you can feel better. And for me, facilitation would be about not having to prove myself, not having any kind of better ideas about anything that happens.
So for you, facilitation is not about trying to prove yourself. Mm-hmm. Facilitation is not, I'm trying to learn, facilitation is not about hearing every single word and repeating back every single word.
So for you, you're learning that facilitation is not about hearing every word and repeating back every word. Me, facilitation is not about projecting your own ideas or opinions onto what you think the other person is talking about.
For you, facilitation is not about projecting ideas and opinions, your ideas and opinions on what the other person is thinking. I'm still working on this. I like to think that facilitation is not about rehearsing what I'm going to say while I'm listening to
So, even though you're still working on this, the facilitation is not about preparing, pre-preparing what you're going to say while other people are sharing. So even though my conditioning thinks it is, I definitely think that conditioning is not about trying to get it right or be good at the skill of facilitation.
So even though your conditioning thinks that so, facilitation is not about getting it right or being good at facilitation.
Alright. How was that?
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a little thing that I would like to do now, and I'm actually going to ask Jen and Dave to assist me, and the only reason for that is an issue of handwriting.
Okay.
So there are certain things that I have found about facilitating over the years that I want to demo some of, okay? And then we can talk about why. In other words, what I'm offering to you is that there are certain situations where you can actually have a pat response. Okay? So, who wants to begin? Jen, do you need a minute?
Or? No, so each one is its own.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You mean which of us?
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you...
Just say my question.
Yeah, you be the
person.
So yeah. Jen, in this case, is the person in group. I be the facilitator.
Okay, got it. So I'm just wondering, I mean, I'm new to this whole thing, and I wonder how much am I supposed to meditate?
Uh-huh. Well, the first thing that I would offer to you is that there are no supposed tos in this practice. Mm-hmm. And so my encouragement is that it's always helpful to meditate with a group, because when we meditate with a group, we tend to be able to meditate longer than when we're by ourselves. Mm-hmm. But the main thing about meditation is always to keep it in the realm of something you want to do, uh-huh. not something you should do. Mm-hmm. So it's far better to meditate for 5 minutes a day than make a contest out of trying to meditate for an hour and losing that contest. Oh. Okay, so some form of that. Mm-hmm. Because if you get it, you can see. So give it to me again.
How much should I meditate?
So you're wondering how much you should meditate,
right? Yeah, because I don't know. It seems like the monks, I guess, meditate all day, and I don't know. I can't pull that off in my daily life.
Uh huh. So you're guessing that the monks meditate all day. I mean, this is not helpful to anybody, right? It's not going anywhere, and it is not helpful. There are times when you really do need to answer the question. Okay? All right. Dave, you want to give me one?
Sure. Well, I was reading something that the Dalai Lama said the other day, and he said that actually he's found that it's necessary for him occasionally to meet.
Uh-huh. So, you know, I don't know the Dalai Lama, and I don't know, so therefore I can't speak to anything about him. I know for myself, I've never found it necessary.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was also, I was reading something in Jack Kornfield. talking about a student he has and who got really kind of energized, and then he gave him some meat to sort of settle him down.
Well, it makes me glad for this practice. And so one of the things that is true for me, one of the things that I enjoy most about Zen practice, is that we don't have shoulds. That we are really called upon, as the Buddha encouraged us, to work out our own salvation diligently. And so that's what we're doing. And we're constantly coming back to our own experience to see what is so for us right now. Now that is said with the understanding that we will come back to our own experience, rather than reaching a conclusion based on what someone else, who we may perceive as an authority, says. Because one of the things I like to remember is that at the moment of death, the only thing that's going to help me is my level of understanding and awakening. So the Dalai Lama probably won't be there and won't be able to assist me at that time, so I'm going to trust my own practice. Now you do whatever rendition of that you want. but again, you know, who cares, really? what somebody else is doing. I mean, for you, you don't even need to care what I'm doing. As long as it's with the understanding that you are looking as deeply as you can look every moment of your life. It's why the Buddha, now this is, I do not have to tell them all this, but it's why the Buddha could so confidently encourage people to do their own looking. Because when they look deeply, they will see what he's seeing. He doesn't need to try to convince them to see what he's seeing. Just do your practice and you'll get there. You will see it. It's not like you're going to get there and see something different. You won't, because there is there. Right? And it's actually here. And when you get here, here is what you get. So, my encouragement, don't even go there. Whatever form of that you want to do, and you can practice with other people until you get comfortable with that kind of a response. But whatever it is that makes it clear that that is not the practice you do. You do not look to authorities to tell you what you should be doing. Then you follow guidance, and the guidance is to look inward and see. Right? Which is not the same as making up your own junk. Yeah?
So I may not necessarily say I've never found it necessary to, which is the way you began.
Yes, well, it is true. In my practice, I mean, I've been doing this for 35 years.
Right.
I've never felt the need to eat meat.
Yeah.
If I get a little wound up, I just tend to enjoy it. And, you know, someday I'm going to die of something. And so, you know, that's a whole philosophical discussion that probably almost nobody in this room wants to get into. You know, the obvious point is, and my life is more important than someone else's because I'm more attached to it. So, yeah.
I'm wondering if there's a response to the person in group who directly asks for advice, keeps asking for advice, to deal with that similar person.
Yeah. You want to...
Next on my list.
Yeah, that's next on my list. It's always good to have somebody ask the question. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Sincere inquirer after truth.
I know what we do in this practice is we reflect. You know, keep the facilitators reflect, and that's really, really helpful sometimes. And I know...
Sometimes!
You know, this thing that I have going on right now, it's just, I mean, the reason I bring it to group is that I know that you have a lot more experience than I do. And so, I mean, I already know what I'm saying, so it's not that helpful to hear it back. I want to know, like, what does the practice say about that? Like, what would you do in that situation? That's what I feel like I really need.
Uh-huh. And so, when it's what happens when your issue is reflected back to you?
I feel like I'm just still in the same dead-end place that I came with it.
Uh-huh. And the dead-end place is?
I'm not sure what to do, which direction to go in. I have no choice to make in this case.
Uh-huh. And so, do you hold a belief that there's a right choice?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So that might be an interesting place to explore.
That there might not be... that there... So I think there's a right choice. Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm bringing it here, trying to find the right choice, and... Perhaps I can look, you're suggesting...
And it might be interesting to see if, in fact, there is a right choice. That exploring the issue of belief in a right choice might be more helpful, ultimately, than getting someone comfortable with the direction.
Yeah, I can see that. And it's also, it's hard because... At least right now, it feels like this decision is breathing down my
neck. I know it does, doesn't it? These decisions, making these decisions, there's always one of those, isn't there? And we have to get it right. Yeah. And so, of course, what practice offers us is an opportunity to explore all those kinds of beliefs, all of the suffering that is inherent in those kinds of beliefs.
Thank you, that was helpful.
Oh, you're just as welcome as a band man. You know, we talked a little bit this morning about the gal, Raquel, on the radio show. And this exchange reminded me of that, where you can, as a facilitator, now I'm going to send you all off with things to do that hopefully won't take you to this point unless you get a real knothead. But it is possible to say to somebody, well, that might be a really good place to work. So how about if between now and when you come back, you're looking at this issue of believing that there's a right choice and what happens to you around holding that belief. And then we can talk about that next week. And they won't even know, actually, that you haven't helped them at all. But I mean, all you've done is offer the practice without delivering any kind of a practice lecture.
And you know, that the radio show was such a good example of it because, I mean, for me, there was so much energy at the end of that interaction. I mean, I projected that it was hard for us not to clap at the pun portion. It was so great. And what she wasn't able to do the content thing that you were guiding her toward, which was so clearly the next content thing. I mean, it was right, I'm sure all of us being facilitators were going right to that point. But for whatever reason, she just couldn't go there. And so leaving her with that other thing, like, oh, that's completely fine. Like, we haven't gone in a wrong, bad direction. It's not that the facilitator went in a bad direction. It's not that she can't. I mean, what she was offered was a way to succeed.
Yes. A next baby step. And thank God, it is in keeping with the practice. So in that case, what the facilitator is doing is looking, right, to what is the thing that this is why, remember when we were talking about the anything you haven't explored is not available to you. But if you do, and all of you do, know, okay, I'm really stuck here. So what would be a good thing to do? All right, I have these techniques, these practice techniques. I'm going to use them. And so that's all that I offered her, was a practice technique, something that she could, as you say, be successful with, rather than, okay, she's here, she's trying to get over there somewhere, she's stuck in a bed. You know, it's just more than she can do. So what can she do?
And as a facilitator, I mean, I can remember as a new facilitator being in situations like that and, you know, being right there, see that thing of like, well, as a little person, and then her getting to that place and it's like, oh, you know, she can't go there. Oh my gosh, I've either, you know, projected or I've something. But that tool of, well, that would be a great thing to keep exploring is such a nice, beautiful way out for the facilitator because I don't have to take her anywhere right there in that moment, and it leaves it with her.
And you can sense with that when somebody gets to the point where if you don't leave them with something like that, they're going to be left with such a load of conditioning that they may never get out from under it. So as the facilitator, if they can't work themselves out of that corner, you got to work them out of that corner. And of course, yes is the best word in the English language for helping anybody out of any situation. You know, just because all that person is getting is affirmation. They're getting encouragement. That's all she's really hearing is the encouragement that there isn't anything wrong. I'm not in trouble, am I? That's that place of, I know she's fine. Good God, I spent years like that. You know, it's not a problem. And now, you know, what is a problem is finding the willingness to get out of it. But being depressed at that level, you know, it's good practice. And so I know that. So, you know, it's like, here's a hand. You know, you can reach out once a week if you want to. And I know you're fine. And between us, we're going to convince you that you know that you're fine.
Yeah.
And there we go.
That's so great. And one other little important thing that maybe we'll talk about this later that you just brought up, which feels like another technique, which is the yes.
Yes.
That in an interaction with someone, again, as an early on facilitator, I can remember someone would say something that was like, I don't know, within what they were talking about, it was clear that they're whatever, like they have a misconception about something or, but within what someone is saying, there's always something to agree with.
Yes.
You know? So even if you... exactly. Where you can, because I project that when someone's talking, within it, there's always something that's, I mean, true is not a good word to use.
Well, even if it's just the sincerity of their effort to express themselves.
Exactly. The fact
that they're there and making that attempt is something that we can affirm.
Yes, and so, like, let's say a basic example would be someone's sharing, and they're sharing in a way that, a misunderstanding of compassion or something, but within there is the compassion, and so to say yes and reflect the compassion.
Yes.
So instead of reflecting the maybe there's a self-judgment.
Well, you know, no, actually. Because they're gone.
Right.
You can make the best point in the world following that, and you have no audience.
Yeah.
Because they just closed down, shut off, and went away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, because really what's happening there, it sounds like you're holding yourself to a standard that isn't, you know, I can't even, well, I'll have to think about it, we can role-play it, but it's just such a skillful, you know, kind of that yes, and then reflecting back into the practice piece of what they brought up.
Is, exactly. You know, affirm what you want them to focus on.
Right.
Yeah.
Phil? Yeah, just from that, it's like taking them where they are and bringing them to the next step.
Bringing them to the next level, yeah.
Well, the question I had is, when you were finishing the initial one, it seemed like, you know, when you offered that practice opportunity, then this is really a question that I do it, but if the people are, you know, sangha members especially, you know, you'd say, could you say, I mean, it seems like this is a good place to use the process map, or...
Well, you can, but you want to be really, really careful. Because what we don't want to do is, so I'm attempting to point out the places where I think facilitators will have a tendency to get stuck. Mm-hmm. And of course the Raquel one was just a fun one because, you know, we're in this retreat. But we want to be careful with offering our ideas about practice to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Because what works for us, you know, we are facilitators, yes, but first and foremost, we're practitioners. Mm-hmm. So we don't want somebody to try to shortcut our practice. It would be far better to spend months exploring something and then have it occur that this is something that we could use a process map with, mm-hmm. than to get into a space and just have somebody say, you know, early on in the deal, well, you could try blah, blah.
Yeah,
do people see the difference in that?
I see that.
And yeah.
Yeah, sometimes down the line.
If it's down the line.
Yeah,
down the line because people have been practicing a long time.
Right, I understand.
Because if somebody's been practicing for a long time and they're being told constantly what practice tool to use,
right,
that's not a service.
No.
Because what they're getting then is, I'll go to group and somebody will tell me what to practice. Mm-hmm. To me, that, you know, when people talk to me about medical stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and I always end with simply my experience. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be dependent upon anything. Mm-hmm. I don't. And mm-hmm. I want to be as much in charge of everything that happens to me as I possibly can. So there are places that we must go, but we must go there with our eyes wide open, mm-hmm. making every choice and decision for ourselves as we go, rather than turning anything over to an expert. And it is true that when you sit on this cushion in a group, you are the expert. I mean, you can be sitting there thinking, oh, I don't know squat. But if people who come in there, especially if they're new to practice, they don't know. The Dalai Lama eats meat. I mean, the entire world of Buddhists are now eating meat because the Dalai Lama does. They don't know the difference. Because there isn't anybody to say to them, find your own way. See what your own experience is. Walk out in the field, look that cow in the eye, and see how much you want to whip out your sword and take it down. So, that's an aside, because somebody was just telling me a short while back, and many of you were there for it, that the Dalai Lama has decided only to eat large animals because few of them die that way.
That was weird.
So, anyway, just keep in mind that you are the authority in people's eyes. And so what you want to keep doing while offering practice as their guidance is to refer them back to their own adequacy in finding their way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, along those lines,
and then Dave, I saw
you. One of the things that I find myself saying is that the encouragement is to, I don't use the word my because it feels too...
Yes, that's fine. Yeah. That's probably a better way to say it. Yeah. People will get tense if I do that because it's like,
yeah,
who are you... You know, who are you channeling? You know, people will get all over me for saying we. You know, it's like, what are you, a queen now? You know, who? But for me, it's very clear. It's we. It's not an I. And so you just look at that and see. There might be sometimes when you would say, when you really realize you're out there by yourself. Okay? So my encouragement would be, don't hold this against Buddhism. Okay? I'm not arguing for the Buddha here. I'm just saying, my encouragement, places that I've tried when this is, you know, you might find yourself in that situation.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dave.
I'm just really glad this topic has come up because this feels like a really important area, you know, for us as people who are taking practice out into the world. And it's also something that is a big issue for me as I facilitate. Because it's easy in my karma to want to be in a higher than position than someone else, like to be an authority. Yeah, that's a comfortable karmic position for me.
Right, which is not a personal thing for you. Right. It's also a male position.
Right. Exactly.
You know, males tend to do the hierarchical thing more than women. You know, we want to. And it's a male thing to see, well, okay, who's the alpha and where am I in the pack? And yeah, I mean, those are just good things to notice, because otherwise we can take that kind of thing personally. We can believe that one style is better than another rather than just realizing that both of those karmic tendencies are there, and they're actually there for biologically a very good reason.
Yeah, and a danger in it, it seems like, is, like you mentioned adequacy, you know, to assume someone else's inadequacy and then take their practice away from them.
Yes.
Because I know from experience, it's, especially for someone who is like new to the practice, in this environment where we're looked to very much as the authorities to just completely give away their adequacy to the facilitator.
Yes.
And if you're willing for that, then you're really doing people a big disservice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I have this situation. Well, it's kind of like what Jen was just doing. You know, I have this situation in my life. What should I do? Mm-hmm. Well, what you could do is, and even if I'm giving them a practice technique, it's not actually helping them get to their own place of adequacy, because the tools they need to be relying on are internally looking to see deeply what's going on. Yeah. Otherwise, we do just get into, well, you can get by that by doing this.
Exactly, and what you're communicating in that is exactly the opposite of what the Buddha taught.
Yes,
that we all are up to our own minds and that we have within ourselves what we need to awaken. Because just to anything that implies that someone else needs something from me, is that's what that communicates.
Yes.
That you don't have that, you do have to get it from the outside, and then now here's a relationship where you can get it.
Yes, and it's such a tricky balance because we are also, in practice, not encouraged simply to go off on our own and listen to our conditioned mind come up with better ideas.
Yeah.
So what we're attempting to get people to do is find that place of deep wisdom inside themselves. From that place of deep wisdom, again, there's never going to be an argument. It's only when somebody is coming from conditioned mind that we have arguments,
right?
And so it's, you know, people will read the precept, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. And what almost every conditioned person on the planet will do is say, okay, so I don't have to listen to you. You know, I'm not going to make you a fantasy of authority. I'm going to listen to me. And of course, what the precept, I think, is pointing us toward is the fantasy of authority, which is conditioned mind. And so in opening ourselves up to be facilitated, what we're learning to do is find that deep wisdom in us. And when we find that, then we will know what practice is and we will be participating and we will, you know, it's not like we're going to take anything off on our own.
Right. Yeah, there's something really beautiful, I think, about the way that we do it. You know, that, you know, we're not giving Dharma talks and lectures and stuff like that. It really is facilitation. I just love that word because it implies what you're saying. Because what's asked of everyone is to give it over to guidance. But then the guidance always is look within.
Yes.
But both those things have to be there for it to work.
Yes, because I can say, you're never going to be truly free as long as you are living off of the flesh of other living beings. Okay?
You're wrong.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people would start there. Okay? And of course, now I can tell you, just because we're this kind of group of people, they don't know what they're talking about. What that's pointing at is a level so subtle, so unbelievably subtle, that it would take a person a very long time to get there. Now, they might believe they understand that because they have a tender, sensitive heart. Okay? Or they might think that's a crock because, you know, God set it up that we're supposed to eat other creep. Whatever that is misses the point. And it's only the person who is going to take that as an interesting point of reference and is then going to explore the stew out of that. Mm-hmm. Just look and 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 look. And when they get to the bottom of that looking, when there's nothing, nowhere else to go with it, that's what they're going to see. Mm-hmm. And that what they're going to do is be able to say, from my own experience, what I know is. Now, it doesn't matter that anybody else gets that. It doesn't matter that anybody else follows that. It doesn't matter. The point is, for oneself, of one's own experience, one knows that to be so. And that's the level of practice that we're looking at. And so it can be anything. It can be absolutely any topic. But that's the level of looking that we are required to do if we truly want to be free. The person who believes will never be free. Never. You know, the Buddha said you need two, so that's what I'm going to do. Great. Wonderful. You could also take up line dancing. Okay? It's not going to help you. Did the line dancing throw you? I mean, you can do anything you want. But if you're looking for freedom, belief is never going to help.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention one more thing about that, the whole thing. You know, you were talking the other day about the difference between being a teacher and being a facilitator. Mm-hmm. And this, if
that was the teacher.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and just to make that distinction obvious, because, you know, there is a place where, you know, what it seems to me like what the teacher does is, you know, there's the authority, and ego would love to be in that authority over people so that it can do what it does and get its needs met. And so,
and in many cases, as mentioned the other day, not have to practice.
Exactly.
That's a very, very popular thing in this old world. As soon as you reach a certain status, you don't have to practice anymore.
And that's what everybody's going for, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is very sad.
And so as facilitators, we're giving, it seems to me like we're letting that need go so that we can facilitate, so we can be present. That's what the reflective listening is all about, because, you know, that's our best shot at not having an agenda, not having ego be involved. But then it seems like what the teacher does is the teacher has the experience that allows the person to step into that role of the authority, but not have it be ego. And so not have that be an augment to the person's practice rather than taking away from their practice.
Yes.
But that, it seems like we need to keep that distinction in our minds, because, I mean, that's as subtle and big as it gets. It seems like it's understanding how to do that.
Yes. Yeah. Do people mostly follow what they've said?
Yeah. Tracy. And it seems like it's, you know, like as a facilitator versus, you know, the teaching part, that person's where they are, and it feels like even with Raquel, like as a facilitator, even just getting them to take a step in a direction of more looking. Like even when Jen was bringing up the question about, you know, I'm trying to find the right answer. You know, I kind of thought in my head, I remember listening about, you know, flip a coin, you know, A or B, and then just like, and then see what happens. And so, I don't know why, but it just, it feels like, without giving any advice, but just a little bit of movement as to like where they can
Yes, look. And I think what you're pointing at here is, that you can, on occasion, offer something that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That when I get stuck in a place like that, I can find it interesting to just, you know, flip a coin and pretend that I'm going to do that for a week.
Yeah.
Flip a coin to, you know, go to the other side of it. Or one is A and one is B. Again, you don't want to get into too much of that. But it can be a way to help somebody take a next step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you could even do that in the, like in the case of Raquel, like, you know, when I find myself getting to that place, you know, not knowing what that little person needs, you know, I found that, like a dominant handwriting really works. Like, again, going to my experience of this tool.
Yes.
Type of a thing.
Yes. Now, Jen, would you give me that question one more time?
About making the decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we reflect on this practice, but what I really need, it feels like right now, is kind of the wisdom that people have been practicing a much longer time have around how to make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And how would it help you to know what decision to make?
Well, it just feels like on both sides there's so much at stake, both for me and other people involved. So it feels like if I could have some assistance on how to do that, then I could do the thing that was, you know, the best for everyone involved.
Uh-huh. And so it sounds like being assured of doing the best thing is important?
Yeah, it's really important. Exactly. I feel like I wanna do the best thing. You know, I know that probably parts of me are selfish about it, and they just want, but I don't want to be selfish about it. I really, truly want to do the thing that's the best, but I don't know how to figure out what that is.
Uh-huh. Okay, so do people see another alternative to take this person down the road?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rebecca.
Well, another thing I noticed that you did with Raquel last night was that celebratory thing. Mm-hmm. It was so... And it reminded me of the best year yet, that we have to celebrate our things, you know. So it feels related to the yes that Jen was pointing out, that you reflected back this really positive thing that she probably had no awareness of whatsoever. And, you know, Jen was trying to remember, think of a way to role play that yes, and it brought up this memory of one time when Jen and another monk came out to West Texas, and I was the difficult facilitatee. You know, I mean, she came, it was the first night of the workshop, and my conditioning just kicked in, and I said, now, you know, y'all come in here, you talk like you talk, you know, I'm here struggling with my conditioning all the time.
And identified with it, by the way, in case nobody noticed.
I said, and supporting you, you know, and then you come in here and you mess everything up. And, and Jen reflected a big yes to me. I mean, she said, yes, you know, she acknowledged that I'm supporting the practice and just totally reflected that. And it's like she just ignored my rant. And I can't tell you what a huge shift that was. And it struck me again last night with the Raquel thing, that to look for the yes.
Yeah, and you can't believe somebody's story. You just can't. I mean, if she had taken you seriously, oh God, you know, it would have been a miserable weekend for her. You wouldn't be probably sitting here today. But she didn't. She didn't take it seriously.
Yeah. Well, and that goes back to what I said about what facilitation is standing with the one who wants to wake up or wants to see. And so it was really like having that faith. Yeah, and just not believing it at all, and finding that place in oneself where you don't take your own story personally, or you know, seriously too.
Yeah, but where you can start recognizing that. Now, with all of this stuff, though, you want to be careful. You really want to be careful because you can start using techniques and miss. I mean, at the risk of sounding egocentric, I bring a level of mastery to this, and that's 99% the result of having done this for so long. Mm-hmm. I mean, I facilitated hundreds of Raquels. Mm-hmm. So in the moment, and it is, a lot of it is that trust, but the trust in myself is built on years and years and years and years of being in those situations. So you do want to be very careful about using techniques.
And the technique that you're thinking of right now would be the saying yes? Or
the celebratory.
Oh,
the saying yes is actually not a technique. It's an attitude of mind. The yes, it comes from a place of, there isn't anything wrong. I know you think there is. I don't. I know you think there's something wrong with you. There isn't. I can see that, you can't, great. You know, you're doing that, yes. Mm-hmm. That all of that is fine. However you are, however you want to be, is perfectly fine. I'll mirror that for you, but I'm not gonna play with you. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna get into it with you. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that attitude of mind is actually not a technique. It's the one that we're coming from all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to actually do one more, and then we can do some more of this. But I want you to do the one where the person wants to know about me personally. Do you have that on there? Okay. Well, there are two of them, and there's another one that you can do after that. So we'll do two of those. Do the first one.
Well, tell me if this is what you mean. But I wonder. You know, I'd really like to know who your teacher is.
I bet you would. since Zen is an awareness practice, and that what we're doing is practicing self-awareness, how would it help you to know that?
Well, because you, I mean, you're asking me to put you in a position of authority in my life and, you know, tell me how to be and tell me how to do practice.
Au contraire. We can stop right there because actually, I'm not. In fact, not only am I not asking you to do that, I would not accept that if you wanted to do that.